Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to episode 66 of the Flight Test Podcast. Today we have a really fun conversation with the Stone Blue Airlines group. That'd be Jeremiah and Matt. You can check them out at stonebluearlines.com. Also wanted to real quick mention that Flight Fest 2015 registration is open. We have about 400 pilots signed up so far. If you're planning on coming, please pre-register. You can do that at flightfest.com. The dates are July 9th to the 12th. We also have registration open for vendors. If you own a business or know of a business you'd like to see there, let them know. You can sign up there at flightfest.com/vendors. We're also looking for companies to partner with that would like to sponsor the event. So if you'd like more information on what all that entails and pricing, you can go to flightfest.com/sponsors. Again, that is flightfest with an F.com. We actually made its own website. So we also want to give a big thank you to Heigl Adhesives for supporting today's content. Obviously, glue guns and glue is kind of one of our main building material staples here, and Heigl Adhesive has put together a page on one of their websites that actually shows the glue guns and the glue formula that we use here at Flight Test. We've had some trouble with getting some complaints in the past about people buying speed build kits and putting them together and finding out that the glue that they purchased from Walmart or wherever was not interacting properly with the Adams Ready Board foam that we use. So we've worked with Heigl and we sampled a ton of their glue formulas and we found the formula that works perfectly or that we really prefer with our speed build kits. You can check out that collection at flighttest.com/glue. Pretty easy to remember. Again, that's flighttest.com/glue. So again, you can visit there to see the glue guns and the glue that we use. And we just really want to thank Heigl Adhesives for supporting today's content. All right, guys, let's get into it.
Hey, I tell you what, does Alex's brother still get all the requests for the autographs?
I'm sure he does. Actually, we were talking that I was going to grow my hair out this year for Flight Fest and then have him cut it short.
Do it.
The old switcheroo.
That would be hilarious.
See a whole Disney movie after this.
Yeah, actually, it's looking like I'm going to be having a baby right on Flight Fest.
Flight Fest, baby.
Oh, I didn't even know. When did you guys find out?
A while ago. My wife, Lindsay, she's due on the 10th. So in
who's the father?
Oh, God.
Alexis. I know the answer to that.
Congratulations, man. That's awesome.
Thanks, man. Thanks a lot.
We've got two, so I feel your pain.
Oh, man.
It's a life-changing one.
Yeah, you can't really say anything. It's no. Like, I think Josh and I, we both, like, got married young and started having kids right off the bat, so.
Oh, my goodness.
No, yeah, I got a house full of kids, too.
Yeah, take over the world with babies.
Babies.
So, yeah, now the crazy thing is my oldest is 13 years old. And it's
you
just,
know what? Mine's just about to turn 13, but mine's a girl. So.
Ah, okay. Well, we got to keep them away from each other.
You got that right, brother.
You know, I fasted and prayed for boys, and I got it. I don't know what kind of deal I made, but I'll find out when I get to heaven. At least I hope it's heaven.
Or you'll find out when they turn 18.
Yeah. Noah's just starting to go through the quieter than normal stage. It's like, wait a minute, you're not talking, you know, as much as I am. It's kind of making me nervous.
So. And when we had round two, when we got a girl, we were like, my wife was like, I'm done. That was good. We got both. Yeah,
one of each.
Yeah, that's not a bad deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Older.
Well, actually, it's not a bad deal because I only have one girl and she's the oldest, and now we've got her changing diapers.
You know, I heard that also keeps them from wanting to procreate too early because it's like, I know those diapers are not as glorious as what they present on TV. And that's
there
good.
You go.
I have no idea what any of you guys are talking about.
Yeah, we're talking about babies.
Peter, you sit and listen politely.
Yeah.
It is funny how, like, the young married couples, if they come around when you have kids, usually them just hanging out with you for an evening, they're like, yeah, I think we're good not having kids for a while.
Yeah, you know? And then you never see them again.
When we were youth leaders at our church, we would bring our, at the time, newborns. And, yeah, they wreaked havoc on everybody. And the girl's like, oh, I want to hold the baby. I want to hold the baby. By the end of it, they were like, take it. Yep. Take it back.
Yeah, that's the exact same. We were doing the youth ministry thing, too. And that was with our first kids. Yeah, we were popular for a little while, but then we kind of got the black plague after that.
Yeah, especially
it
when
it is
they
funny how you
it.
Kind of lose friends when you get married, and then when you have kids, your friends change, and usually they're married, then couples, and then people that have kids, versus a bunch of, you know, just married couple only.
Well, what's funny is you can't socialize with just married couples only because they actually go out and do things.
Right.
Yeah, it's funny. They go out on dates and stuff, and when you do go on dates, usually as a married couple with kids, you talk about the kids, you know?
Yeah, I know, yep.
And
yep.
You look at each other. I can't wait, honestly, for when the kids are out. It's going to be a real challenge to figure out what are we going to talk about, you know? Because we usually just play catch-up on all the details on what's going on around either work or the kids.
Talk about flight right.
Man, apparently you haven't been around any grandparents because all they talk about is grandkids.
Yeah. Well, my kids and under not make you grandparents too soon.
No.
Oh, man,
no,
wow, this is flight test, isn't it?
No, this is Parenting 101.
Yeah. Is this segment going to be in it?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, wow. We already started. Actually, before we get into it, why don't we just we're here with Stone Blue Airlines. Yep. We got Matt and Jeremiah. I'm Alex.
I'm Austin.
I'm Josh.
And I'm Peter.
And today we're going to talk about
babies.
I'm out of here.
The one reason we all don't fly more.
Yeah. It all changes after a while.
Yeah. Oh, that's a why.
Yeah, we actually we recently ran into you guys at the CFL FPV, and you guys drove down to that. Is that correct?
We did, and we left way early due to the crazy snowstorm coming through our area. So yeah, needless to say, it was an adventure to get down there.
I think it'd be more accurate to say we slogged down there.
Yeah, yeah. We should have just been pulling sleds with all our gear behind us,
even in the mud.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And for those of you who are listening, the CFL FPV, it's down in Florida. Actually, I think it's the biggest FPV meetup in the United States, I think. But yeah, it was a good time. It was a nice change of weather for us. It wasn't exactly good weather, but it wasn't freezing cold.
But we all do look really good in boots.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I know. I actually, when I got home, I was still wearing mine, except I just had shorts on then. It didn't quite make a fashion statement like it did down there, but yeah.
Well, no, actually, there's a funny story about that. When Jeremiah went down to Walmart and got his boots, he had already ruined a pair of socks, a pair of shoes, and his feet were pretty caked up. So Fred Provost, Flying Monkey, actually went with him, and he got video of Jeremiah actually washing his feet in the one of the Walmart bathrooms.
I saw that. You look like a salesperson.
Yeah, I saw that too.
Yeah, and since then, Fred's actually posted on People of Walmart. So,
hey, you know what?
People of Walmart.
When things get that low, it's funny how Walmart is looking like a good place to bathe.
It was muddy, and if we didn't have those boots, it would have just been horrifying. Because we would have had to fly home with those shoes.
Oh, my gosh. I
didn't think about that.
You know, when I got back, I had my shoes in a bag. They were tied, and then I realized there was like a small greenhouse happening. Once I opened the bag, it was like steam rolling out. I'm like, wow. It was rough down there.
I could have done without that, Jer.
Yeah, I'm just envisioning.
It was a fun weekend, but it was muddy and wet.
People really made the best of it, though. It was crazy. The second that it was dry enough to try to fly, people were up there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even think muddy does it justice. Like, it was literally like
you're walking in soup.
It was a swamp.
Yeah.
It was bad.
That's my worst fear with events. I have recurring nightmares about Flight Fest, like about it you know, raining and being muddy, cuz there's so many complications with an event that, you know, the weather can just turn on you and there's nothing you can do about it.
Well, I don't know if you remember this, but I actually came up, put my hand on your shoulder, and I asked you, does this make you feel better about thunderstorm?
Yeah, actually, I do remember that, yeah.
It is funny how, like, you host a flying event, and it's like 9 times out of 10, you're going to get rain. We hosted one last year, did a small meet, and had worse fog than I have ever seen in my entire life. I mean, we were able to use a flashlight shined it on somebody, and then behind it looked like they were on a projection screen. I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah.
But it's like you'll have a week of beautiful weather leading up to the event, and then nothing but rain.
Yeah.
So really, you know, how do you even plan that?
You can't.
Yeah, it's kind of a roll of the dice, and Flight Fest worked out for us for the most part last year, and so yeah, I definitely felt for those guys at CFL because there's only so much you can do about that, and so much you can plan for, and if sometimes it just doesn't work out.
I think higher ground is key. Matt and I have been talking.
Yeah, actually, it's solidified our plans for one of the FPV meets that we're going to host. All tarmac, all airport.
It's at an airport. It's all tarmac, and literally no one has to park in the grass if they don't want to.
That's
so. Yeah, we kept going back and forth because we had this neat farm area that would be a fun spot to host one. We're looking to try to have one in kind of like the fall, probably 6 weeks after yours, farther down south for these guys. And you know, maybe you guys hopefully come down and just fly and hang out. Don't have to work or do anything. But yeah, it's in a small mining town. And the guys that run or are involved with the airport are very pro FPV drone use. They're using it as a test site. And the guy I used to work with, or still does stuff with NASA, and it's just a full airport. And
well, it's really unique to actually have a whole municipality behind what you're doing because they want to see something like this go. So you know, we can't really pass that up because it's just the environment's great.
Yeah, it's a cool spot. So we're kind of excited. We're still trying to solidify dates, probably like end of August or first of September. We're trying to break it up between it's funny, there used to be like no shows, and now it's like there's shows every few weekends. Yeah. But you know, it's all on the East Coast. I hear guys on the West Coast are like, somebody please do a show out on the West Coast for us.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
That's so bizarre to me, yeah.
I know. I'm like, they have all this great flying weather and nobody's doing it. Yeah. I mean, I think guys get together out there. They have small pockets that fly, but you know, real combined meets. So maybe that's something you guys need to host.
And talk about long range. You could get some range out of that place.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah.
Blows me away with looking at like the AMA registry. We were looking at the number of registered like model fields just in Ohio. It's like two times the amount of registered fields of California. And I couldn't believe that. I was like, seriously? And I know California has some dense population, but you also have a lot of open and the number of people there.
Yeah, it seems like all the flying footage you see from California, the guys like are parked on the side behind their house and they're flying out into what looks like thousands of acres of just open land.
Yeah, I've seen that too, just like on undeveloped roads, you know, fresh paved roads that they just haven't developed yet.
Yeah, for us, I mean, even here in Virginia, we're like, yay, a football field width of open area. Let's go, you know, and then we have to climb out, and then we're, you know, usually over trees after that. So it's like if something goes down, you're hunting.
Yeah.
You mean I'm hunting?
Well, yeah, I usually sit that out.
Yeah, I was kind of looking through some different, like, Californian clubs and just, like, some different flying clubs out west. If there's somebody out there that's listening to the podcast that – they have a club that could maybe host, you know, 500 to 1,000 people. You know, drop us an email at support@flighttest. And Alex just gave me a dirty look.
Actually, I think it should be Peter giving you a dirty look.
Yeah, actually, that's funny. Or something.
Did you just get an email?
let us know if you have a club that could support a lot of people. Cause that's something we're interested in doing. But the number one hiccup, and we've actually had some people out on the West Coast helping us look, the number one hiccup is a place. I mean, it sounds silly, but it's true. I mean,
you know, I'd touch base with is Ruben over with Sweep Wings. I know he's got a small pocket of guys that fly. And then Team Legit seems to have also a nice little group out there that flies. I've followed them for a while on YouTube, too. So I might be able to help you guys out.
Maybe.
Cool.
Interesting, yeah.
Before we get any further into it, why don't we go back on your guys' history? Stone Blue Airlines, obviously, you guys throw events, like you were saying. You have an online store. You do videos on YouTube and stuff like that. Why don't you guys, typically when we have people on the podcast, we go over basically how they got into the hobby. What's your history with the hobby? How'd you get into it? What was your first flight like? How did it all start for you guys?
For me, the business honestly started 15 years ago without really knowing about it. On a whim, I had watched some videos of some guys flying and was like, the RC hobby looked cool. You know, I'd liked flight, had been in auxiliary of the Air Force Civil Air Patrol, and through that had had a chance to go up with a couple different flight instructors, and just kind of on a whim, I was like, let me research some gear, figure out what I need to do, and I'm just going to teach myself to fly. At that point in time, I didn't really know of any clubs or anything in my area, and I just bought a bunch of gear and basically put it in the air and crashed it as fast as I possibly could, and then fixed it and did it again until I figured out how to fly in a straight line and turn it back around. And it just kind of started, you know, that part of that
lineage still shows, by the way.
You know, and it just that part of flight for me was so cool, and kind of, you know, building in the evening. I think that's what makes this hobby neat. It's not just the flight, but it's that the process of putting something together, knowing that you kind of built it, and then the excitement of getting it up in the air and seeing what that creation, you know, did. I went through a cycle of it. I run another company, a production company, and so that's kind of where a lot of the branding stuff comes through. And through all that, like 3.5, maybe 4 years ago, found your guys' channel, and I had kind of been out of the hobby for a while. And honestly, it just kind of reinvigorated me to start playing again. And then the foam board stuff was so much fun. And then honestly, I just started kind of posting videos and just kind of having fun with it. And then the whole thing just kind of honestly snowballed. And Matt and I, we met up about a year and a half ago. Has it already been that long?
Yeah, and where I come from, I was always into full-scale aviation, especially like warbirds and everything, but I grew up in a NASA family, and I wound up working in the space shuttle program, and what brought me to Virginia was when everybody was laid off, it pretty much decimated the economy in the area. So kind of had to pull out, and that's when I met up with Jeremiah, but I've always been into to aviation. I remember when I was 15, I actually had a Piper L4 restoration project and all that. But I was always intimidated by RC airplanes. I was never into RC because I had it stuck in my mind that, you know, you're going to have a balsa kit that you're going to spend 6 months putting together, mm-hmm. sink $200 in it, and the first 5 minutes it's crashed. So, I wanted to do something with aviation. I needed some sort of out, especially since I wasn't working for NASA anymore. So I picked up a Hobby Zone Champ and probably broke about 7 wings off of that. And it was right at that time that, you know, I saw these goofy guys on YouTube doing a review for an F4F Wildcat.
They were goofy.
So that was, you know, I've been watching, what is that, the second episode or something?
That was the first one.
Oh, is that the first?
Yeah, scary. Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
I don't think I've
ever seen it. Yeah, so actually, that's when I latched onto it. And then you started doing the stuff with the swappable stuff and all, you know, with all the foam board. And, you know, Josh, I don't know how many of those FT flyers you've made, but I'm up to 43 now.
That's awesome.
When Matt and I met up, Matt really was the king of foam board because he was doing so much with that. I had kind of moved over into the EPP and then messing with the guys from VAS and Alex in flying EPP aircraft, and then FPV, once I got a taste of that, that was pretty much it. I mean, like, it was over, you know, and then it was like every weekend, it was like if it was a clear weekend or a clear afternoon, I'm like, I wanted to go up and fly. And it's funny how that interest still hasn't waned. I'm like, if I've got a free afternoon, I'm like, I want to throw the plane in the car and I just want to fly, you know. It's just that, it's just so much fun. It really is. That, I think that has to come first and foremost above all of this. If you don't have the passion for that, you can't do the show, you can't do a store, you can't do any of it, because it just, it won't come natural. And I think that's why you guys have been so instrumental in this hobby, period, is that the passion comes out first and foremost for what the hobby is, and the camaraderie and the building and just what that is. And, you know, that's how Matt and I kind of hooked
up. Yeah, those 43 FT flyers were actually, you know, I was building them with kids and teaching them how to fly. So,
yeah,
you know, that's, and then great. That whole environment, the flight test thing, I'm able to, you know, I was able to get them tuned onto that too. And it's so nice to have, you know, a channel that's, you know, completely safe for them to be able to watch, that, you know, empowers them to be able to get into the hobby, but mm-hmm. do it in an inexpensive way. Yeah, so
absolutely.
Props to you guys. Great stuff.
You guys are making me cry now. No, that's awesome. And you know what? There's so much stress in the world and stuff. You don't want to get introduce people or be in a hobby that just causes stress. And from the surface, this hobby looks like nothing but stress. Like you described earlier, let's spend $200 on a plane that takes 6 months to build that we last, 6 seconds.
It is sometimes though.
It is sometimes, but there's so much good. And if it was just, a whole bunch of knuckleheads, calling themselves flight tests, it wouldn't be successful. It's you guys that are promoting the hobby, building with kids, encouraging people and showing them the fun that they can have and also the way that they can build relationships through it. It's not just our mentality. It's the whole community. It's just a real blessing that people have latched onto that and grouped together so quickly.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And then, we do stuff with the FPV and everything, but that's definitely not the first step in the hobbies. And we encourage all the people that we possibly can to look at flight tests, to look at what you guys have to offer, because it's a really powerful resource. And let's get as many people into this hobby with the least amount of drama possible.
Yeah, learn how to fly. Be the pilot first before you do anything. The whole store kind of came out of just having been in the hobby for so long and going through that cycle of what do I buy, where do I buy it from, and then ultimately how does any of this stuff really work together. And for me, I like stuff that works. Stuff that works, I'm like, I would rather pay a little bit more and at the end of the day have something that worked and worked right the first time than buy a little bit cheaper and then, you spend 4 to 17 hours tuning something that you're at the end going, crud, I need to sell this off and buy something else. That's where kind of our thing, FPV Made Simple, kind of came out, is that I want guys that are transitioning specifically into the FPV side, getting some really good gear, make a purchase one time, move forward, and then really have something that they can grow with. Because, it's rough. This hobby will definitely, it'll hit your bank account pretty hard when you first get into it if you start buying all that stuff that looks so nice on the outside, then you get it and you fly it, like you said, and then you're like, well, it fell apart. Now what do I do?
Well, actually, that's why I'm making all your planes for you.
Well,
now.
Yeah.
We're all bobbing our heads yes while you're talking, by the way. You can't see it.
With Matt handles all our custom builds, and he is a phenomenal builder. I'm a tedious builder, but when I see Matt, I'm like, I have literally stopped. I'm like, I just don't even build anymore. I'm like, Matt, here's what I'm thinking. Can we do this? Yeah. And it turns out great.
I remember one nutball that Jeremiah actually made that was completely covered in duct tape. I mean, I did. I let out a little scream when I saw it.
So awesome. I noticed that's a big part of your guys' business, the custom building. What does that process look like, and how does that work?
I'll tell you exactly what that process looks like. I go into my shop, lock the door, turn on an audiobook, and have fun.
Fair enough.
And I spend most of my afternoon on the phone trying to sort out what people want to go on those builds.
I see.
Yeah. No, but you know what I really like? A lot of the times people, give us a license to be creative with stuff. And that's what I really like. And I'm really touched by the amount of repeat business that we get with that. So that tells me that they appreciate the amount of quality and everything that we're putting into stuff.
I think the idea with the custom shop was, we know a lot of guys have, honestly, more money than they do time. And for some of us, knowing myself, it's like kind of tuning stuff. I'd rather spend a little less time tuning and go fly.
Yeah, it's a perfect match because I have more time than I have money.
I think that's definitely a demographic, of people that, they are interested in building, they love, the idea of having a custom setup, but they don't have the time or the interest in, in actually building something. And so I think that's a real demographic that you guys are meeting there.
And it's not for them to not know the gear or not,
talking about, the educational side of it, we're going to be releasing a lot more build tip videos, and I'm not holding anything back of what we do. It's because there's so much detail and so much craftsmanship that goes into it. There's a lot of investment of time and effort into it. And, a lot of people want to just get out and fly. They don't want to have a PhD in how to put all this stuff together. They want to get something up that's going to last 3 years. And what we're doing when we're doing our videos and everything, we're shooting gaps and we're flying a little bit crazy. Well, with our personal stuff, we have to make it tough. And
very tough. Sometimes we hit things, moving helicopters, non-moving helicopters. when we got back from that, I was like, Matt, we really need to make this next one really strong, just in case it ever happens again. So the new, I can't take you anywhere. and to account for the strength and durability, on our trip back while we're trying to leave for Florida, Matt's got a great idea. We're going to fly this one road, this really cool area. It's like a 10-mile run. And I end up stuffing my Chimera into the top of a palm tree. Nothing wrong with it. It pulled the plane. You know, we get the plane back out. But, you know, that's the idea, is that these guys can get a build that feels like, in essence, they built it themselves, or they have a custom build. It's, you know, it's not pulling out of the box and just throwing an ARF kit together. It's they get a say in the color, the look, the design, the layout, the gear that they want. And then when they get a plane back, they get a plane that's tuned, it's been flown by us, and they pull it out of the box. And we had a guy that we sent it down to Australia. We talked through him over the phone, went everything, and he went that afternoon, tossed in the air. And this, you know, this is a seasoned pilot. And he messaged me back. He's like, man, it flew like a dream. I said, that's what we want. We want guys to have a really neat experience moving that direction, especially when you're, you know, it's not for everybody, but it's fun to do some cool stuff. And we did a recent Star Wars themed build, which was fun.
Yeah, that's cool.
So what does that look like?
So the guy wanted a Boba Fett color scheme, kind of like to go with all the Boba Fett decor that the guy, you know, his helmet and color scheme and everything. And then we found some really cool decals, and, you know, hey, we like that idea. I've got one for a Star Trek, you know. I just like some of the theme stuff. I mean, to me, the plane should look as good on the ground as it does in the air. There's no reason for that, you know, when you're doing some of these. So we kind of like doing art pieces with this stuff. We're doing what? You're doing a camo one for a guy that he's down in Hawaii. And the guy's like, he's like, I just want it to disappear when I go up in the air. I want it to disappear.
You better not land it in the trees.
I know.
It's disappear on the ground.
Too. Yeah, that's what we said. We're like, it's gonna be like Jurassic Park. You're just gonna be hunting for the thing once it lands.
Now you're talking about the Boba Fett guy. I remember there was a gentleman that watched. We put out that quick tips with Alan Bruce. Someone made a Boba Fett FPV helmet. Is that the same guy?
No. Actually, when we posted the pictures of that wing, he made sure to post the pictures of Boba Fett helmet.
Yeah, somebody put that up.
Oh my goodness.
And it was kind of actually a weird experience. You know how when you buy a car, all of a sudden you start recognizing all the cars of the same type?
Yeah.
Well, we took this Boba Fett wing down to that Central Florida FPV meet, and I started noticing. I actually counted four different people that had Boba Fett T-shirts on. I mean, what's? I have never noticed that many people walking around with Boba Fett T-shirts before.
That's awesome.
It's just neat. It was fun hand delivering a plane to a guy, and then hearing back that, you know, he tossed it for the first time and the plane just flew. He's like, it flew great. You know, so we're spending the time on these aircraft to really know them inside and out. And Matt's a phenomenal builder. I mean, you know, Stone Blue Airlines is definitely blessed to have him building on that end and cranking out some really cool stuff. And I really like on the tech side, helping guys kind of sort out what the best gear is for them and what they're trying to do, whether it's range or whatever. And then we also do some commercial stuff too. So mapping and more drone work. So we're kind of excited about that too, and playing with what, you know, where the tech's kind of taking us. And there definitely is so much to it, not just, you know, from the hobby side, but commercial use and everything else. I mean, it's
exciting to watch how applicable this stuff is in so many different realms.
Yeah.
But then again, it's kind of exciting to watch the way the legislation's going, but we won't.
Well, hey, yeah, I know.
Yeah, let's not get stuck on that.
Well, I don't know if you guys saw that. Did you guys see the newest thing that came out last night?
About YouTube and everything?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm like, the craziness does not end. You know, it really doesn't.
Yeah, we did see that, and it's hard to tell how much stock to put in anything at this point.
I know.
Just because there's so many isolated stories, and it's really hard to see a trend and what's going on. I don't know if somebody wants to, for people listening that may not know, if somebody wants to fill them in on what's going on.
Basically, from what I saw, there's a cease and desist letter, or an educational letter, as I think they called it, from the FAA saying, by the way, we noticed that you took this video of a beach and we consider it sellable artwork, or since you have the YouTube monetized, you know, this is commercial activity, and someone complained about it, and we think they have a correct claim, and you need to stop, and here's why. Here's your educational safety supplement.
So basically somebody uploaded a a YouTube video, and even though the video had like a couple hundred views, which translates into like less than a penny on AdSense, that was technically a commercial use, is what they were calling that. And so,
well, they even came from the standpoint that YouTube itself is advertising on there, so it's like hitting somebody with commercial use of a drone while they're not actually getting the profits for it, but somebody else is.
There's so many gray areas across the whole board with the FAA right now. It's sad because I feel like they're not reaching out to, honestly, the groups, even like yourself. I mean, period. Why aren't they spending the time to reach out to groups and organizations that truly know this tech inside and out, you know, versus kind of throwing stuff out and
I do think some of the direction that they're taking with some of the new rulings and all that, it's pretty positive. It's actually better than we thought it was going to be. So
it definitely, yeah.
But I think it is these isolated incidents. You know, you had one inspector down there or whatever, but, you know, to me now it's just another episode of As the Stomach Turns.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
I'm ready just to go have fun again.
I mean, and with all this stuff too, I mean, you look at as from a safety standpoint, I mean, even a full weekend of people flying yet again, I mean, this hobby is extremely safe.
Yeah.
You know, the pilots that are flying are extremely responsible doing this, that do it, that truly have a passion for it. You know, we get in cars every single day and drive. Exactly. And we don't think about those guys that, you know, honestly, they don't care about what they're doing in their car and, you know, take somebody out. But we're okay with that. It's just funny how it's been stirred up so much it really is. It's hype. It's all hype.
If I had a choice, I'd rather get hit in the head by a DJI Phantom than a home run baseball that went over the fence.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, luckily, I'm going to stay optimistic as far as, like you said, the most recent releases with the FAA, that's something we can kind of sink our teeth to. It's kind of optimistic. It seemed like it's kind of going along that line of more common sense.
Yeah, and we have to praise the FAA for the positive steps that looks like they're taking too, because we want to encourage them along the positive lines of looking at this stuff objectively, seeing that it's a new technology that opens up, you know, a whole new sphere. And, you know, you have the world really opening up to this stuff and moving at a pace, and we don't really want to fall too far behind. So, you know, I'm really hesitant on just sitting there and bashing on the FAA too. And honestly, I don't know what some of the answers are to these questions, because when you have guys coming, you know, flying Phantoms in the flight path of a 747 on final, you know, what do you do about that? There's a lot of questions that we don't know the answers to, and that's a huge responsibility on their shoulders.
And those kind of things. I mean, that just comes down to common sense. And if someone does that, great, they're fine directly. I mean, I don't think it has to be complicated. I really don't. I think just like anything, if you jaywalk, you're going to get in trouble if you get caught. You know, I mean, and these guys that are doing stuff that way are putting people at risk. Absolutely. Pull them aside, because, you know, we don't need those guys shutting our hobby down, because 99% of the rest of the guys are doing what they're supposed to. And those 1-2% that are just being rogue out there, that, you know, truly don't know what they're doing with the gear. Yeah, we don't want them to be you know, responsible for the rest of us.
And for the you know, for the violations that really, you know, that are extremely dangerous, that threaten human life, you know, such as, you know, flying, you know, a quadcopter, you know, near an airport or where airplanes are landing, that sort of thing. I mean, I think that if you make the penalty for that high enough that, you know, ignorance of the law starts to, you know, not be a problem. Like, this used to be a thing. I don't know if this is still a thing or not, but people were pointing, like, lasers at helicopters.
I still hear about that.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know exactly what the penalty is for that, but I think it's like somewhere, like, I think you can get like 10 years in prison or something like that for doing that.
I think it's $10,000 too. It's something
$10,000 or $15,000.
Like, and what the exact penalty is, you know, isn't important. But the point is that it's extreme. Mm-hmm. And so people know that exists.
Yeah, and I remember in the when I was doing military duty and everything, when that started happening, they got a lead refund.
Because I mean, it's something dangerous. It's something that threatens lives, and so is, you know, in theory, flying a quadcopter around an airport. And so I think that once they start to sort some of that out, and it's just, you know, it's more And it's not that difficult to identify, you know, somebody that's flying a quadcopter. It's happened, you know, multiple times so far.
They're just going to make an example of someone really, really soon.
Yeah.
And it's going to be all over the news, and it's going to be basically, it's going to define the, you know, how some of these people that are just, you know, getting a quadcopter for Christmas or, you know, going into Best Buy and buying a Parrot Bebop or whatever, you know, it's going to take a situation like that to escalate it to the point where it's in the public's mind of what's appropriate and what's not appropriate.
I think FPV is definitely the flavor of the month right now in the news. And yeah, much like when cell phones came out and cell phones had cameras on them and could do HD video, people were extremely worried about the privacy issues and all of that. And now what do? We spend the evening looking at YouTube at, you know, videos that were captured off a cell phone, you know, in many respects. So I think on that end, it is the flavor of the month because it's new and people are still getting used to the concept of these flying drones, when the reality is, I mean, it's not like I go outside and look up and see anybody flying over our area. I mean, you know, so far and in between.
That term drone is actually starting to soften up a little bit. And, you know, I definitely think it's here to stay, because what really the FPV does for me is it allows me to see my world that I'm in from a different perspective and kind of in a National Geographic sense where, you know, it sounds kind of sappy, but it brings a new sense of wonder when I can, you know, just see where I'm at differently. Well, don't get to do that every day.
It was exciting. This past week, one of our local business magazines is doing some stuff on tech companies, and it was cool to have them do a little write-up on us. But so Matt and I went out, and we're flying. I had one of the planes up wings, and so we had the photographer out there who was taking some photos for the magazine, and afterwards, I was like, I absolutely wanted to make sure this guy got an experience of what it was like to do it. Not just take a few photos and then roll out, but had an extra set of goggles there just for this guy, put it on, and he was like, wow, wow. I mean, that's what I love about this, is when you can get the goggles on someone, no one's ever like, yeah, you know, I never would want to do that again. it's always like, wow, how do you do this? Where, you know, they want to learn more, you know, and I think that it's sharing the experience, and flight's so cool, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I agree that, you know, FPV is kind of the flavor of the month right now. And, and you know, very occasionally we'll see a comment on our videos, you know, like, you know, hey guys, easy on the FPV. We want to see foam airplanes and that sort of thing, which is great. But, and we do that. We switch it up all the time. But I think that, you know, FPV is one of those, super inspiring experiences, you know, when people can have that experience. And, I know that there's tons and tons of cases of people getting a taste of FPV and just, you know, finding their way into just all aspects of the hobby through that, you know, just because it's a super memorable experience.
I think you know when this hobby is that good when you have full-scale pilots that fly 747s want to fly FPV. that kind of says something to the overall appeal of it. But
so, wow, I can't do this with a jumbo jet.
All right, so I got a question for Peter. After you guys did that whole sledding episode, it totally had in my mind where I was like, I want a foam board glider that I can, like, strap on, run down a hill, and catch some air. I mean, seriously, Peter, just design one. I will build it.
You know, we've all been talking about that lately, and actually I've exchanged some messages with RC Test Flight. He might be doing something along the lines, too. And Josh,
oh my gosh,
you're thinking about that too, aren't you?
Yeah.
We're all going to die.
Count me in. I will be in the test pilot seat for that one.
Good, because I was just wondering who you'd get to fly it.
I'll get it first.
Every one of us is going to have a replacement here in the next 6 months.
Oh yeah. My gosh. So.
It's safe to say that we won't be around to make a speed build kit for it. So.
Yeah, right.
Or plans.
Yeah, I made me out of cardboard, though.
Well, you guys remember when that, it was probably like a year and a half or 2 years ago, some research company whatever did a large, like, multi-rotor setup where the guy was, like, in the middle of the frame. It looked horribly dangerous, but as I looked at that, I was like, I would so do it. I would just so do it.
I mean, you got to try it, you know?
Yeah.
Actually, what I'm really looking at, what I'm hoping to be able to come up with is a wing and ground effect vehicle, you know, like in a chronoplane kind of a thing where you're not necessarily going to be going up, you know, 500 feet on foam board.
Yeah.
Just enough to get the feeling.
That would be really
They have boats like that. They have boats that go into ground effect. One thing that I found interesting about that guy who flew on that giant home-built Multicopter is. Yes. I haven't really seen anything from him ever since that video.
That big Lamaze ball that he's sitting on.
He never posted any more videos after that.
No, I think they have a big one of that. They have the Volocopter.
Was it the same guys?
I think it's the same guys. Yeah. Oh wow. They were just prototyping with that one.
Prototyping
the
stuff.
Thing.
Yeah. Oh, they're flying with a Spectrum too, like a DX6.
Yeah, you know? Just sitting on top of it.
You're gonna trust your lives with that
on top of a labor ball.
Hey, that's the one time you don't want to have DJI as your autopilot in a flyaway.
Kind of brings a whole new meaning to brownout.
I see what you did there.
You know what's kind of cool? If you go back, I think it was World War One. They used this. It was a plane design called the Penguin, and when they didn't have many planes that they could teach people from, it was like a 20 horsepower motor. Do you remember
that? Clipped wing one.
Yeah. It was like a little fuselage and one wheel right in the center of gravity. And the idea was is that they would just kind of race this thing around like a little go-kart and hop it like maybe 2 feet in the air. Once it left ground effect, it would just come right back. But the idea was to teach them how to use all the controls and be able to fly it. And it just flew off of that one little wheel and you got like maybe 2 feet in the air, if that. But they have these pictures of these guys racing around almost like Shriner vehicles. And these penguins. And I loved it. It was like a line drawing art illustration. But yeah, look that up sometime. I'm pretty sure it's called the Penguin. I'm pretty sure it was the right after World War One.
Yeah, since we said the Shriner thing, we'd have to wear fezes while we did it.
It has some really cool theme music.
Yeah, that would be
it. We'll get Fred Provost up there in a monkey costume and a fez. So we can actually have flying monkeys.
There you go.
We really don't want to encourage people to do it, but we're going to do it.
No plans. Please don't ask.
Wow. I would love to see that. I would absolutely love to see it. Sign me up. Seriously. I'll do it. I will sit in the pilot seat.
That's funny.
I don't remember what the thing was called. I think it was called something like a Blimpy or something else. I think it honestly came out of like Asia, and it looked like an inflatable glider wing that you kind of would grab onto. Almost like a surfboard or something.
Oh, the Whoopie Fly.
There we go. Yeah, Whoopie Fly, Blimpy or whatever. Yeah. And I looked at those, and then I don't remember if I followed through enough to find out what the cost was. But
$13,500.
That much? Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's about.
Well, we could all go in on it.
I was horrified. I'm pretty sure it converted about $13,500 to have your own inflatable. And Goodyear did it back in World War II.
I remember that video from YouTube. It was like inflating.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
It was really cool.
Yeah, it flew phenomenal. It was really well engineered and real practical. And the engine was like also a compressor, so it kept it under constant pressure. And they had like fiber formed inflatable wings and. Ironically, with Goodyear being close, Forrest Barber, my old flight instructor, had one for a short amount of time, and there's a picture of him trying to blow it up by hand, you know.
Oh my gosh.
It was just a mock-up. And Peter just pulled up a picture of the Penguin.
That's what it looks like?
Yep.
It took me forever to find that.
You guys did that one episode where you got to go in the blimp.
That was my most jealous moment with Flight Test, actually, yes.
It was cool.
Yeah, you guys should definitely do something on that end. I think that would be so cool to see. Honestly, if it could foam board really hold somebody. Wow.
I honestly think, seeing the strength of that yield, it's kind of crazy. I remember restoring – you said you restored restoring an L4?
Yes.
I did an L2M and a DC-65, and it's always been Taylor Crafts in my family. But I was in
one, I noticed that.
Three of my dad's projects. But when we put the wings on before it got covered and we would move them, you could bend and twist those things. They were so flimsy. The second the covering got on and the struts and the trammeling and all that stuff, that's when it really took a lot of rigidity. So, foam board has a lot of potential. You know, it's just how you use it. Just don't want to get it wet. You know, that's all. Just don't fly on a nice, you know.
Going back to Ed with Experimental Airlines and all that, his tip was, you know, patiently putting on that packaging tape. You do increase the weight a little bit, but you wouldn't believe how long we've been able to fly some of those foam board kits just doing the packaging tape laminating.
Yeah, it keeps them so durable.
It's amazing. It is amazing how just the right film, the right media on the outside does add all. I mean, monocoat on a balsa wood wing. I mean, you can't sneeze on that, and then all of a sudden you can grab it by the tip.
it's pretty
awesome stuff.
Well, the same thing with the EPP. I mean, I exclusively use 5mm laminate on what we're doing, And it just adds so much structural rigidity to stuff. I mean, I'm sparring stuff up like crazy anyway. I mean, it's, you know, planes are stiff as a board once you get them. But, yeah, it's amazing the type of tensile strength that you know, that really adds to it.
Yeah, it is funny. You can take something that's so noodly and add the little bit of different materials to it and turn it into something that,
yeah. Well, let's even bring up that sore spot when you plow it into that helicopter.
By the way, if anyone's scratching their head, at Flight Fest, there was an unfortunate meeting of a, was it Chimera? What was it?
Chimera.
And then the, about a 400.
600
size heli.
550.
Yeah, 550 class heli.
Yeah, and they met in a very inglorious way. But there was peace afterwards, and are you guys still in contact with that guy? Does he?
Everything ended up amicable. I mean, everything was great. I mean, he was a super nice guy. I don't remember his name now at this point. But, I mean, it was so epic that it was right at the end, you know.
Well, and I'm not really going to, you know, highlight this, but, you know, there were three aircraft there.
Alex.
There was, and, you know, by the way, guys, that was some good sideways footage of that crash.
Thanks, guys.
But anyways, getting back to it, that wing, we could actually just pick that one up and fly it again.
Well, I heard from the guy about 2 months ago and said he spent about, I don't know, maybe 45 minutes dropping his new gear in it and went flying again. He said, oh, this flight's great. Still flying it.
That's awesome. That's pretty crazy.
So, yeah, build them tough. In this hobby, you will crash. You will crash.
Yeah, that's very true.
It's not when, it's you will.
Sometimes you will crash into others, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, except when you're trying to, because I don't think I've ever seen a combat at a show that actually scored any victories.
You know,
it is funny how, yeah, you
can when like, you're trying,
yeah,
to
300
it.
Planes in the air, no one can hit each other.
I know. I think that Carbon Cub in the what is it, Experimental Airlines tube plane?
Yeah,
that was like the best
noob
hit
tube?
Of all
yeah.
time. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
That noob tube, by the way, if anybody that's listening, is not for noobs.
You know, I don't know if I'm going to get a lot of hate and stuff. We've flown a couple experimental airlines, and I've gotten to fly a couple others and stuff. They're not necessarily the easiest to fly.
I would say, yeah. The little like Delta Wing one's fun. It's quick. But, no, all of his planes are definitely, yeah.
Not floaty, and I mean the ailerons, the authority on them, and everything. I mean, just the roll rate. I had a lot of fun with it, and actually, Ed's moving to our neck of the woods, so
cool.
You know, hopefully, we're going to be able to do some stuff.
Yeah,
with
him. Excited about that. Yeah, having him in this area. Do you guys ever build the Fugly Jet? That's a fun little EDF. It looks crazy, but it really is a wild little beast to fly.
Nope.
I can't say I have.
Uh-oh. I think I've seen it. I know what you're talking about, but I haven't built one.
It's a crazy design from his. But it's pretty fun to fly though. I like it. EDFs don't really. EDFs have seemed to go in the way of the dodo though. Now I feel like EDFs are not. You know, it's not the flavor of the month. Where for a while it was like everything was jet EDF this EDF that, and you know you just don't get the runtime. They're fast.
Well, a lot of our planes we can hit 100 in, so.
Yeah.
Yes.
Usually, and they got the low end, too. You know, we were able to launch and all that with, you know, with the torque and all that you just can't do with an EDF carrying payload.
There's one plane that a buddy of mine that you'll see on the show once in a while, Jason Glaze Van Gogh, him and I, there was a plane that came out, the J-10. It's like, I don't know, $500, $600.
The Chinese flight.
Yeah.
The one that's done by World Models or something.
Canard on the front.
Yeah, I've seen that one, yeah.
Yeah, that thing just looks amazing.
Well, that's a beast. That one you really need some.
So him and I keep toying about splitting some money and just going in on it and having it together. So that way, when we crash it, we can fry together.
You know, this guy likes to FPV everything. Listen to this. I'm big into discus launch gliders and stuff. And you know, he comes out and he takes a look at it. And he's like, Matt, would you let me tape an FPV rig to the GLG? I'm like,
that's what Josh does with all my planes. He's like, hey, we could put FPV on that.
Yeah,
cool. It'd be probably good.
You know, I'm
sorry, it's an addiction. I can't help it.
He's not touching my DLG though.
It's funny because we played with a DLG yesterday and
you wanted to strap the camera to it.
I did, and Peter was like, no.
We just put Mobiuses on it, so, and they were great.
Yeah, we put Mobius on it. You got
a
decent flight.
By work, I think he means it didn't crash. It did not fly great.
Also, it wasn't discus launched. It was towed up by a multicopter.
Yeah.
So.
Have you guys
actually? That's probably your first good day of weather up there.
Have you guys thought about doing just a small one, even like a small what was it, the Alula or what is
the,
it?
Yeah, the Alula. Kind of yeah.
Well, it, actually, Verizon just came out with a little
flicker,
the Whippet. Yeah, the Whippet. Whip it good.
Did, you guys, did you guys ever mess with trying to do one from foam board that would give you any kind of flight
time? You know
what?
I'm kind of interested about that because I heard you say I want to build one on a foam board and one of the things. David's just like, no.
The original Simple Soar design before that episode was even done was a V-tail because you can get some decent DLG off of V-tails compared to conventional tails. And I had really amazing luck with it. I could only DLG it about as high as the trees, but I got a good three or four turns before it landed and stuff. But the problem was with the V-tail. When you whip it a couple different times, the wing was plenty strong. I mean, just a piece of tape, and it was amazing how strong the wing was. But the V-tail, I fatigued that thing so many times because that side load of that centrifugal.
That torsional stuff.
Yep, that torsional stuff just whipped, you know, whipped it. And no pun intended. But it was really cool. I mean, it was not like
a good name for it.
Blue looked good, but had the flaps, had everything on there, and I think the fuselage is still crumpled up in the shower in my office. It flew good, but it just wasn't repeatable.
But by the way, he wasn't giving the airplane a shower. Just his shower in his office is just storage. So it's stuff full of random airplanes. And
speaking of showers, this is going to be a total departure. But I had the best call in the other day for the store. So I get a missed call. I call back, and I'm like, "Hey, just returning your call." And he's like, "Hey, I'm in the shower right now. Can I call you back?" I said, "I think the question should be is why do you have the phone in the shower?" And then we both hung up.
We both hung up. That's hilarious.
Hey, something.
I'm like, apparently he really wanted to take calls that day.
Now, see, I would have just wanted to make it awkward, tell you that I was in the shower, and keep talking to you.
You're funny. You're talking about DLGs and Alulas, changing the subject from men in showers.
Oh, yeah. Let's change that subject right now.
Hey, at least we got off the FAA. That's all that matters.
Hey, by the way, Jeremiah didn't shower for 6 days on that Central Florida FPV meeting.
You didn't need to tell him.
I believe that.
Now, change the subject. Go ahead. Move on. It's in one of our videos coming up. Everybody will know.
Need to change the subject. If you take a Bloody Wonder. And
awkward.
Bloody Wonder works really good as a DLG if you put weight in the nose because of those big vertical fins. Lee Cagner actually converted one into one and took some video of him and his daughter throwing it around, and it did really well because those huge vertical stabilizers, you know, really helped you. And it
that's really interesting.
Yeah, you got to get the a little bit more nose heavy, and obviously it's not going to glide like an Alula, but it's fun.
Yeah, and there's like there's two different worlds, it seems to me, of DLGs. You know, there's the there's stuff like the LaBelle and the you know, the new Spectrum that just came out.
I like the LaBelle.
Yeah, and those those are great, you know, good fun, you know. But then there's the whole other end of the spectrum, which is the competition DLGs, like the carbon fiber and the, you know, just like the, you know, you're talking like four figure planes at that point. I think that there's two different, you know, ends of the spectrum. Like I think that, you know, as long as you're having fun with it and it's discus launch, then, you know, it's all good fun.
I feel like every time go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just about to say, one of the things that pops to my mind, especially when you talk about what you put together, was it's bound to be a good slope soar, too.
Very true.
Yeah.
Yeah, every time I launch a discus launch, I feel like I'm going to get 10 people hating me because, you know, the technique's wrong, everything about it is wrong. But it is fun just spinning around and throwing something as high as you can and flying it around and doing it again and again.
Josh, you're having fun with the wrong technique.
That's right. I'm having fun
wrong. You two will make sure you know that.
But that does – I think at this point where the hobby is going, that stuff shouldn't even matter. We should – you know, where you guys are doing so much education and where I think – where even for me transitioning, where I got involved in the local group, and I was thinking about this from, you know, kind of where I started from within the hobby, and there was a couple really nice guys, and then I had that pocket of a group where I just didn't feel comfortable there. And I think what's happened, I had somebody call the other day and was saying, "Hey, you know, at your show, can I just come? Like, I'm not real experienced." I said, "Absolutely." I said, "Just come, hang out, enjoy." I said, if you don't have anything to fly, we'll have stuff there to fly. I said, come and have a good time. I think where this hobby is going is that it is becoming an inclusive, not exclusive, where before it used to be, you know, if you had a lot of money, you could do this or you could do that and you had these rigs. And now it's about just come together. I don't care what you fly, how you fly, just fly safe. That's it. Have fun. Fly together, you know.
Yeah, very, very well put.
That's that's where this hobby is heading, and I think that's the best thing we can have for it.
I totally agree. Well, guys, I had some vague bullet points of things to ask you guys about today, and I think that we covered most of them. One that we didn't get to, which I think some people would be interested in hearing, is just what you guys are flying these days. I think that you guys are more into the wings and that sort of thing than the multirotors, or maybe that's incorrect. But I just figured just what setup you guys are flying and what you're enjoying these days.
Yeah, well, Matt's doing, he's gotten into the DLG thing. I'm kind of on the fence of like, great, I need now to get something else because I want to keep up with Matt if he's doing that too. But it's neat. I can see the relaxing side of
I still love even taking line of sight plane and doing touch and goes. I think that's one of the best things in the RC. But the FPV too, of course. Yeah. I tell you, there's the next plane I'm going to be building up for myself is a sweep wings flinch, but right wing's fixing to come out with the Drac.
We're excited about that. That's something new on the horizon that we're looking to get a hold of. We have a Z3 that's coming. I'm going to build one of those up. I'm flying a new Chimera. I just finished a brand new flinch from Sweep Wings. Love that. Beautiful little baby wing. And was flying that at the meet. I posted a really cool video up of, well, I thought it was cool. I was shooting the gates the guys were doing with multi-rotors with the wing. So I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, I saw that video. That was a sweet video. I saw it.
He ripped both vertical stabilizers off that Spark.
And then, I've been bashing on my Spark quite a bit. Got a couple juggernauts. I like the wings, and the small wings are a lot of fun. I get a lot of flight time out of that flinch, and it's kind of become kind of my little Swiss Army knife of aircraft because it's really small, fits in the back of the car. But I'm getting, 25-minute flight times and long-range FPV on a really small platform. I love it. Really great plane. Wings are a lot of fun. I enjoy the wing side. And then I've got, I've got an old Spectre V1 that's been hanging on for 3.5 years, and I love that plane. The thing looks literally like flying trash.
Speaking about that plane, did you know an FPV camera hitting a fence sounds like a ball peen hammer if you're going fast enough?
Actually, I think that if anybody, we would probably know that. But for people that may not know, what is a Spectre for people that may not know?
Video Aerial Systems manufactures their Spectre, and this is one of the first ones. And how I got into FPV was with Alex Grieve, and he's from Video Aerial. So we got it's a great little basher plane. Great little basher plane. It's since been retired. He has a new version that's out, and we've got one of those too. But the old ones, sometimes it's those planes that just kind of hang on, and you're like, well, should I keep flying the thing? Well, I kind of bash it. Well, I'm like, well, a little tape of glue and things flying again, but it's seen all kinds of fun. I actually have a video coming up. We ended up shooting the New River Gorge Bridge with it, posted from last year on our road trip up to see you guys at Flight Fest, and it's fun. Old planes, new planes, kind of everything in between. I think the hardest thing is just keeping up with planes in general. This hobby is hard where you're like, I want that one, and I want that one, and the next thing you know, all you're doing is building, and you're like, I'm not flying anything. So I'm trying to just stick with a couple different aircraft and just fly. Just have some fun flying with them.
That's awesome.
Keep them in the air.
And speaking of Flight Fest, you guys will be at Flight Fest, right?
Absolutely.
Well, why else do you think we wouldn't schedule our event around there? Because we wouldn't even be at our own event. We'd be at Flight Fest.
Exactly. We had a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun last year. It was a great event, and so many nice people there. And
it was actually the environment with the people that were there. That's what really made it.
Yeah.
I could not agree more.
And the looping flight test music.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're going to be hopefully expanding our speaker system a little bit this year. So there'll probably be maybe a little bit less music, but there'll be
Could we expand the audio selection?
Yeah, actually, yes. Actually, that's in the works right now.
I just have dreams of the loop.
No. we're having some new flight test music made as we speak. So,
ooh. Oh, really?
That's cool.
So, I actually some of it has been previewed a little bit. In the sleds episode, actually, was a new track.
Yeah, during the flying.
Yeah, cool. During the flying. So, So yeah, I think we'll definitely be doing that again. So yeah, if anyone that's listening that's coming to Flight Fest, you should definitely stop by the Stone Blue Airlines tent and say hi to those guys. If you'd like to meet Matt and Jeremiah.
Love to chat with them. Yeah, we're looking forward to a fun show and hanging out with you guys up there too. And we'll get some, well, hopefully we'll get some epic footage while we're there. Just try not to hit anything this time.
Nice. Are you guys going to Ceph or Null?
We've been talking about just doing it for fun. Are you guys going?
We're going to be at Ceph and Null.
Do you need any roadies?
Any roadies? You don't want to sleep in the RV. There's snoring issues and Peter's real loud. No, and
yeah,
we thought about just coming down just to see, because I've not experienced either of those shows. It would be fun. It'd be fun to go to.
They're both amazing in very different ways.
Well, yeah, if you guys are wanting to go to an event that you're planning on just going just to hang out and just to check the event out, I'd say Joe Nall would definitely be worth your time.
Yeah.
Okay. Ceph's
cool too. I think you guys would have a good time at both. At least last year, FPV was pretty well accepted. It wasn't.
At Ceph, it was too.
Ceph, awesome. I had a blast flying FPV. And there's some really cool trees and some really good flying, and we'll see how it is this year, because I'm sure they change the layout and the rules and stuff like that every year. But even at Joe Nall, there wasn't really designated FPV areas or rules or regulations. It was kind of unregulated, but it was well accepted. Actually, Pat Hartness, I took him for a FPV ride, and he's the owner of Triple Tree, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So yeah, he was loving it.
The control line guys at Null didn't like me.
Actually, I was flying with Pat Hardness, and I flew him through his. They have like a little air traffic control tower, and I flew through the scaffolding there. He's like, I need to change those antennas up there on the top. Look how bad they're looking.
See, look, there you go. The benefits of FPV. Yeah. No, that sounds great. Yeah, yeah. We're gonna have to chat about those shows as well. And just, yeah, I kind of just want to go down and experience
them. Oh, it's like, yeah. If you think, I don't know how much I'd be in the air at Null, because it'd be like a kid in a candy shop. I'd just be going to all the different things.
Yeah,
looking.
If you want a place just to walk around and just just with your mouth hanging open, looking at everything, I'd say Joe Null's definitely the way to go.
Bring like a some kind of transportation, whether it's a bike or like a motor scooter or
a bicycle would go a long way.
A bike would.
Oh, just due to the sheer size of the place.
Yeah, it's massive.
400 acres.
You're not walking across the whole event. It's just like.
Well, Josh, David, and I did that in 2013, and we were miserable.
It was rough. We looked so pathetic. People just pick us up and be like, "You need to go somewhere, don't you?"
And
you know?
And when people didn't pick us up, it was like, it's like, please pick us up.
Yeah, desperate. We were absolutely desperate.
And even Dave Knopp, he went to Joe Nall with us last year. He's our camera guy. And he's not really into the hobby. I mean, he it's tough for him to be into the hobby because he's always busy filming it.
Yeah.
But even he was like, this event was really cool. He's like, I would just love to bring a go-kart and just ride around.
Yeah.
Because it's literally just like kind of like a go-kart track. There's dirt bikes and golf carts and all kinds of motor little vehicles driving around. There's traffic jams.
Barbie mobiles, Peter.
Yeah.
That's actually what me and my friend, my brother did. We all took the power wheels of the lawnmower and just strapped to it. One night we just went driving all around.
Yeah.
Cruising.
Yeah. Oh, I remember that now. That power wheel thing was pretty sick.
It's a death trap. Especially if you get the throttle stuck wide open.
I think Flight Fest people talked how they're very easily able to fly whenever they want, and it was really open. Yeah. For me, going to Ceph, Joe and all, I hardly got to fly at all, but Ceph, I got to do quite a bit of flying with Alex and them, and that was real nice. It was a pretty laid-back atmosphere.
Yeah, Ceph is real laid-back, and it size-wise, I mean, it was pretty packed. Mm-hmm. They're starting to run out of room there, I think. I think they have enough room for a couple more years, but if it keeps growing like it has been, they're going to be running out of room. But, it was pretty laid-back, and it was really well-ran event. We got ourselves into trouble a couple times, and the way that they dealt with us was completely awesome. I mean, they were super nice, and we didn't know we were doing anything wrong, and they just came over.
We were flying 8-foot wingspan airplanes in the park flyer area. It was so big.
Nothing wrong with that.
Well, they're foam. They're foam.
The 200% ones?
Yeah, and they were the same speed as all the other ones, but it was just they're so massive we could go out a lot further, and we didn't realize we're flying over little lines. And they're like, yeah, you know, it's cool that you guys are doing it, but stop. And we like that. We appreciate it.
At least they're good about it.
Yeah.
Are you guys planning for your show? Are you guys going to do any coordinated multi-rotor racing? Because I am building up a new race quad, so Alex, I'm looking out for you. You took me out at the RMRC event, so I'm coming back.
Yeah, I think it would be a good idea. We need to maybe we can talk with GetFPV on where they got those Lumineer little waypoints.
Multi-GP.
The multi-GP guys, I don't know if you guys have talked to them. The multi-GP guys, yeah, they do the gates and then they do timing. And they're cool. Right down in the Florida area. I think I talked with him recently. He said he's got stuff that he actually will ship around to different places if they want to use stuff.
Huh. That's interesting.
I think due to just the more casual atmosphere at Flight Fest, probably something like the Lumineer gates is probably something more that we would do. I don't know. There's just so much going on with, I mean, we already have 400 some pilots signed up for Flight Fest. And so there's just so much going on. I think it'd be hard. I think that the timed racing works better for more like a dedicated FPV meet.
Small.
So we'll see. I think we'll definitely have some gates up and probably some flappy dudes, but
And the other thing too is last year we had Anthony from Immersion. He did his best to help out with the FPV line, and he did a great job.
He's so cool.
Obviously, it's still kind of a learning curve. I mean, even down at the GetFPV, I think they did a good job too. But it's always kind of a learning curve, figuring out how to get people so they don't step on each other. People aren't crossing over on each other's frequencies. I have a pretty good feeling you guys will be hanging out around the FPV line quite a bit. If that's something that you guys would be interested in kind of helping out with or heading up.
Absolutely, that would be awesome. Yeah.
Because
everybody knows that we're professional and we have our act together.
And hey, I mean, really, that meet went really well. But we were doing the same thing too. Yeah, it's just I think the only thing that happened is people got spread out, and what was happening is occasionally guys would like call out and like, "Hey, I'm powering up on whatever," and they were slightly too far away to actually hear you do that, and then somebody would power up and be like, "I can't see."
Yeah, but still, you know, and that was first very, Flight Fest was absolutely,
and that was so far in between though.
Wow, it was. I couldn't get over how well that event actually
for that many people to be in all that in that one space.
Yeah, and for that first time, just absolutely slam the Furies.
Top notch. Yeah.
Oh, your dad, man, Austin. That was. I think he really made that event for a lot of people too, and again, you know, thank him for his hospitality.
Yeah, it's a great spot. And you guys are even opening up farther down the field too, I think. Is that what you're saying? So you're gonna have a little bit more space even added?
Yeah, the lady that owns the property to the south of my dad's property, she was kind enough that weather permitting, as long as that ground isn't too soft, we're allowed to use that. So that's why we're a little concerned with maybe needing to cap it, just because registering just because we may not have access to that property. So
and I know we're gonna pack them in even tighter than last year.
Yeah, right? So we need to make sure that, you know, for everybody that does make it out there, that it's a positive experience. And if it's too overly crowded, then I think that's we're gonna have to cap it off. So
yeah, I think we're up to what, 400 registered pilots already.
I haven't checked it in a couple days, but yeah, that's where it was last time.
The moral of this story is get your registrations in now.
Yeah, right.
We just shot an update video regarding Flight Fest, which hopefully we'll be releasing here in the next week or so. But basically, it'll give you everybody a heads up on what's going on with Flight Fest and what we're planning. Of course, we don't want to have to cap it, but it's a sad reality that, you know, we can't have 1,500 registered pilots with what we have in that space, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, just keep that spot by the Port-a-John reserved for us like last year.
No problem.
Yeah. No, I signed up yesterday, so we're excited. We're looking forward to coming up and hanging out, flying, and just being there.
Awesome, guys.
It'll be fun.
Well, guys, I think that we covered a large range of things, and I want to thank you guys for coming on the show and for spending some time with us. So this was a fun hour.
Yep. No, it was. Always yeah, good was talking fun. With thanks, you guys. Thanks so much, guys. Yeah, I appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you guys soon.
Absolutely. Catch you later.
Yep, see you guys.
All right, see you.
Bye, guys.